Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Law, the host of Sandbox Radio. Thanks so much for downloading the podcast. This episode, The Shadow Knows, was recorded at Town Hall Seattle on October 31st, 2016. Sandbox Radio is made possible by a grant from 4Culture and by the generous financial support of listeners like you. For as little as $5 a month, you can become a sustaining donor of Sandbox Radio through Patreon. It's easy. Just go to patreon.com/sandboxradio and sign up today to become a patron. Now here's the show, featuring special guests John Engerman and Sean Marie Stanton.
Sandbox Radio, we'll stay all day. In the backyard we'll play, jump into our sandbox.
We build castles and kings, words become things.
Seattle. Coming up in the show tonight, Sandbox Radio presents new plays by Scott Augustin, Lisa Halpern, Elizabeth Heffron, and Wayne Raleigh. Yeah. A short story from the master, Edgar Allan Poe, and more, oh, so much more, with original songs from special guests John Engerman and Sean Marie Stanton. Favorite Sandbox Radio players, including from Classic King FM, Marta Zekan! Yeah. And the Sandbox Radio Orchestra, led by Jose Juicy Gonzalez. So, sit back and relax as we take you into the world of Sandbox Radio Live.
My name is, and always has been, Gremte Lautke. When I was just a little girl, my dear parents went on an afternoon pleasure cruise on the River Druge.
Oh, what a gay excursion we will have on the waves.
We will eat the sturgeon liver and drink the sour cherry brandy with the mineral water.
The boat sank, and their dear bodies were dashed to pieces on the stones of the River Druge. I was sent to live with my mother's half-sister, my Tanta Luza.
You can sleep in the loft with the puppets.
Tanta Luza ran a theater of the puppets.
A puppet theater for the working men and women of the city. You will find no whimsy here, nor will you find your culture. This is not the fine arts palace. This is the coarse arts palace.
During the day, the puppet shows were for the children.
Oh, hey, elephant. You have fallen down the well.
Yeah, little Marinka. I thought I saw a little cinnamon bun and reached my trunk for it, but I toppled in, and now my large bottom is stuck in the well.
Was it a cinnamon bun?
No, it was a small brown stone. But now I can't get out.
Oh, elephant.
But when the shadows of the night crept over the city, when the sun surrendered to the stars and the children were shooed off to bed, the presentations of the puppets became very frank in their subject matter. Very adult. And I would watch from my hiding place high above the stage.
Juanita, my dearest sister. How good to see you. You look full of health and vigorous.
Antonio, my brother, it is almost noon, and yet I see from your hair and your robe that you are just rising from bed. Your face is still creased of the pillow.
I was up quite late into the night rereading passages from Cervantes.
Oh, Antonio, all of your life you've been such a terrible liar.
Juanita!
I know you have been laying down and commingling your body with the body of my fiancé, Carlos.
No!
Do not deny it, Antonio. You have been secret lovers since last harvest. He craves your manly flesh and not the bosom of my womanhood.
I am sorry, Juanita, it is true. He worships the spire of my cathedral. And not the water of your humble baptismal font.
Then there is only one thing to do.
Oh, Juanita has a knife, a wickedly sharp knife. That is what a scorned woman will do, stab people.
Oh, please, Juanita, no. Why?
I am going to flay your hide, and I will wear your skin as a costume in the darkness of the night. Carlos will think it is you, and he will make love to me.
Oh, this is romance.
Yeah! Hello?
Oh, it is Carlos.
Antonio, Juanita, what have you done?
Love me!
When I was 13, my aunt summoned me to the office of her business.
Ah, Granta, you are old enough now that it is time for you to earn your keep.
Oh, I could scarcely believe my ears. I was to have a job with the puppets. Maybe I would be the usher or the ticket taker.
You know Graf Schluger von Schluger?
The richest man in town who also owns the horse meat cannery?
I have been told he is going to buy this building that houses my puppet theater. He is going to tear it down and build a coffin factory. It is a popular idea because it would provide jobs for all the young orphans and blind women in town. I cannot let him do this. My puppets are my life!
I don't see how I fit into this plan.
Graf Schluger von Schluger has a son, Peter. You are to befriend him.
And try to get him to change his father's heart about the coffin factory?
No, you are to kill Peter. Schluger von Schluger will be soaked in a father's grief for months. His business plans will flounder. It will give me time to hire an arsonist from Dusseldorf to burn down the horse meat cannery and to the ground.
No more horse meat? Then what shall we have for Sunday supper?
Beans.
And I was an obedient child, so late at night I crept into the window of Peter.
Who are you?
Me?
Yes.
It is just Grandpa Lautke.
Why are you creeping in the window of me? It is very late.
I have seen you walking about town in your gray jacket and blue trousers and the funny Austrian hat with the grouse feather. I thought we could be friends.
You thought we should be friends, and so you crawl in my window at almost midnight? Do you see how strange that is?
Yes, it might seem strange to the person whose room it is.
No matter. My godmother sent me a game from Poland called Ponies and Frogs. Would you like to play?
Is it a game of skill or chance? I am not a very lucky person.
Oh, it is mostly won by cleverness, with just a little bit of dice rolling.
And so we played the silly game.
Ha! Look! Your frog is riding my pony!
And we talked of our mutual love of concertina music and stale brown bread dunked in salty cabbage broth. Before I could stop it, we were friends, and that meant we were doomed.
It is your turn, little friend.
Peter, I must tell you who I am.
I know who you are. You are the girl who lives in the puppet theater. Papa says show folks are prostitutes and vagabonds.
It is worse than that. My Tanta Luza gave me this slice of strudel to give to you.
Oh, I love strudel.
Everybody loves strudel. But this strudel has not just apples and raisins. This strudel also has strychnine.
Oh, that very inviting pastry would be the death of me. The buttery, flaky death of me.
Peter, I cannot let you eat this. I will eat it myself.
It looks big enough for the two of us.
Yes, Tata Lucia is known for her large baked goods.
Do you have the warmth and affection for your aunt?
I wish very much, and have prayed to the infant of Prague to have a place of love, or even tolerance, in my heart for her. But she has always let me know that I am a burden. And you? Do you love your father?
Well, I am a disappointment to him.
No one would miss us.
No one at all.
Tea would be lovely to wash down this strudel.
I will ring Holga to bring tea, and let me get my pen and ink and fine Icelandic stationery. We will compose notes of suicide to my father and your aunt, telling them to look for our bodies in the horse meat canning factory.
And so we wrote the notes and arranged where our bodies would be discovered. In the wee hours, Peter's father, Graf Schluger von Schluger, and my Tante Luja rushed to the house of equine flesh. They beheld in front of their eyes two small, lifeless heaps.
Oh, Peter! Peter, my son!
Granta! Granta!
Oh, Lucia von Schluger, this is your handiwork. Shut up! I am not a child killer. I please children with puppets. I don't slaughter the innocent, but you would stop at nothing to get your way.
Yes, maybe, but not this time.
Where are your tears for your son?
Where are the tears for your niece?
You son of an old goat. You have not changed since we were 16, and we would go under the hazelnut trees and have the intercourse until we were sore of the privates.
And now we are the most bitter of enemies.
Why do you really seek to close the puppet theater?
How else could I get your attention?
Do you really think I am the sort of woman who could make love in the same room as cadavers of two children?
No. Should we move the bodies?
That's what I was hinting at.
Come, let us hop up on the conveyor belt and get them out of sight.
What? How strange. Oh, these are not the bodies of children. They are sacks of root vegetables.
Who would play such a prank?
Now, Peter?
Yes, Grimta. Throw the switch to start the conveyor belt.
What is happening?
Oh, no! We are trapped in the processing line! Our bodies will be taken to the cooking vats and the chopping stations! We will end up in cans labeled Grade B horse meat.
Aha! Grimta!
Peter!
Where did you children learn such wickedness?
We learned it from you.
Yeah.
We are doomed.
I believe there is just enough time to make love before we are killed by your machinery and rendered into anonymous chunks of meat.
And so, Peter and I watched the lurid coupling and dismemberment of our family. Flesh brought together, flesh torn apart.
Oh, not as disturbing as I thought it would be. Life never is, I suppose.
Now what?
My father has a truck that he would use to transport dead beasts. And you have puppets. Many puppets.
Oh, we shall have a gay travel caravan of puppets and delight.
Yes, yes. A joyous life for us. I clap my hands in glee at the thought of a life in show business.
That was 30 years ago. Along the way, from time to time, we would pick up outcasts and shy geniuses, the strays of this world. We built the world's most magnificent carnival.
Who would have thought this story would have a happy ending?
But there is one thing. Peter and I never eat. Oh, it is not what you are thinking. We eat horse meat every chance we get. It is strudel we don't touch.
On a moonless night. It's the only time shadows won't be missed.
Whoa! I've never seen so many shadows.
Right, Shadow 130,000? I heard they invited every shadow in the Western Hemisphere.
Who knew you could fit so many shadows in a room?
Fine!
So what's the fire drill about?
Settle down, 47. Here's the sitch. 12 is in a serious pickle. Tell him, 12.
Well, I've left my person.
Wait. I thought you were just thinking about it.
Ah, geez, she's lost it.
Don't make me cite you in contempt again, 47. Why would you do such a drastic thing, 12?
I want to be center stage. I want to be the important one. I'm tired of being a tag-along. I feel like a unpaid escort.
Deal with it. This job isn't just about public service. It's your duty. It's your destiny.
No, I'm out.
What happened, 12?
Well, that's just it. Nothing ever happens. My person is a dullard. I gotta schlep around with her 24/7 and she never does anything I want to do. She goes to the same places day in, day out. Doesn't she get sick of it? Doesn't she want to try something new? Well, I do.
I can't believe you two split up. Just thinking about it gives me the hiccups.
Everything gives you the hiccups, Three. You're afraid of your own shadow.
Let's keep the personal digs to a minimum, all right, 12?
Sorry, President S. Sorry, Three.
That's okay.
Clearly, this feeling has been lurking in the shadows for a long time.
Lurking in broad daylight's more like it.
If I feel this way now, imagine how I'm going to feel 5 years from now. If this is the shadow of things to come, I don't want any part of it.
Order, order! 12, how could you do this?
I just want something more, better. Is that a crime?
Be honest. Did you see some other shadow's person and develop a crush?
No, not that kind of shadow. I just want to shadow any person or thing I desire at the moment. A free spirit. Spirits can be free, why not shadows?
Oh.
This is so wrong.
Last warning, 47.
We're in big trouble here.
You're right. We gotta pull out the big rays. It's reflection time.
Oh. Shh, 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 shh.
Do you remember the first time you encountered your person 62?
Like it was yesterday. He was just a baby. Cutest thing you ever seen. We were at the beach, and he noticed me for the first time. What a feeling. I'll never forget it.
For me, it was on the school bus. I'd waited my whole life, and then it happened. She looked over and noticed me. I could see it dawn on her that I'd been with her the whole time.
Oh. 12?
I'm sorry. I can't take it anymore.
According to the Shadow Code, you have to take it. It's your life's mission. You've been assigned this detail, and you better take it seriously. This isn't a restaurant. You can't order the perfect person. You gotta take what you get.
I don't have to take orders from a book of codes or from any of you. Admit it. This is just a shadow government. You have no real authority over me.
Oh. You gotta trust in the basic tenets.
But I don't trust it anymore. I don't believe that only the shadow knows. Why are we shadows?
That's one of the great mysteries.
It's not fair.
Oh, you know the gig, 12. We stick with them no matter what. Even when your person changes significantly, loses a limb, gains a lot of weight. It can be challenging for a shadow to reflect a person no matter what. But we don't just leave.
Yeah, don't be crazy. No shadow has ever jumped ship.
There's a first time for everything.
Your person will have no shadow. How can you live with yourself?
Who's your person, 8009?
Bob. I love Bob. He's kind, funny, total activist. I mean, sure, he's always got a 5 o'clock shadow.
But he amazes me every day. Bob doesn't know you exist. If you left, he wouldn't even notice.
Okay, sure. Rarely do they pay attention to us after the age of 5. But there's a deep loneliness that our presence keeps at bay. Whether they know it or not, we're essential.
But shouldn't we have a choice? Come on, don't you all want more?
Well, now that you mention it, I kind of do. Sometimes it's a hassle being the reflection of a corporeal being.
Yeah, always waiting for the light to bring us to life.
To be honest, I've always wished we could reflect colors. I want to be purple so bad.
I'm with him. I dream of having dimension.
You know what drives me nuts? Bob grinds his teeth.
You think you got it bad, 12? My guy is rotten to the core, and now he's running for president. Ugh. You don't see me complaining. Everyone's got their cross to bear. Every person gets a shadow.
I know it's not easy, 12. But you gotta get a hold of yourself. You gotta reconcile with your person.
Doesn't it matter that I don't love her?
Well, it's better if you love them, sure. But not every shadow loves their person all the time. The world doesn't come to an end, but it will if you do this.
Madam President, what exactly are the consequences for an act of defiance like this? Will she be put on trial?
Worse. It could unravel the space-time continuum.
Are you serious?
Deadly. The shadow world has a tenuous relationship with the light. If we shadows don't hold up our end of the bargain, our people will die.
She can't do this. She'll put every one of us at risk. I don't want the world to end. I don't want to walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
I'm too young to evaporate.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
Let's take it down a notch, shadows. Everyone, close your eyes. Breathe in and breathe out. Now picture your person in your mind's eye. Can you see them?
Yes.
Good. Now think about what you love about them.
Her smile.
The way she bites her lower lip when she dances.
Can you think of something you love about your person, 12?
can't.
Try.
Oh, okay. I like when she stops to hug a tree. That's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
And when she gets the cup and paper out to save the ladybugs that accidentally fly into the house, she takes them out one by one, patient as you please, because she wants them to be happy. You gotta admit, that's cute as a button.
Oh, yeah. You see, I bet there's a lot of remarkable things about her. You gotta stop assuming you know everything there is to know and rediscover her. Love her for who she is today.
Love is strange, isn't it?
Yep. It's a gift for as long as you remember it is.
I can work with that.
That's all we can ask of you, of ourselves.
Beyond the shadow of the cat.
Sun's gonna rise soon. Another beautiful day to be a shadow. Meeting adjourned.
Please welcome to the stage, John Engerman!
A little, this is a little gothic art song, just for the occasion. There are songs in the shadows, there are voices in the wind. There is music in between the dusk and the dawn. For those who will listen, in the distance there's a call to arise and follow on. Follow deep in the shadows, follow high on the wind, the echo of wonder, echo of danger. Where it leads, you must follow. Where it ends, you don't know. Where it starts is in between the dusk and the dawn. From the shadows to the moonlight, from the Eden to the fall, to arise and go beyond your own meaning, go beyond all you've known, echo the wonder, echo the danger. The shadow knows the moonlight, like the wind knows the leaves, like the music knows the silence between dusk and dawn. In the margins of your vision, in the shadows on the wall, comes a whisper to arise and carry on. Carry hope to the trenches, carry peace into war, and echo the wonder, echo the danger, echo the thunder. Welcome, stranger. Like the shadow knows the moonlight. Thank you.
another installment of Platitudes from the mind of Peggy Blatt.
I was 7 when I found I liked being scared. It was the weekend before Halloween. I was supposed to be asleep when I snuck into the living room to watch TV from my hiding place under the coffee table, Hitchcock, The Birds. I nearly choked on the sleeve of my flannel nightie when Suzanne Plachette was dive-bombed and blinded by crazed seagulls. My forbidden hideout only heightened my fear, and even more exciting was the reactions of my mom and dad.
Whoa!
Such a fuss about a few birds.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Right behind you.
And that was it. I liked being scared, and I would be scary for Halloween. No more hobos or gypsies or princess anyone. I put my mom's black slip on and combed my dad's Grecian formula into my light brown hair and became the scariest woman I knew, Morticia Adams. And even though I looked more like Pugsley, with my pedal pushers and turtleneck underneath the slip, I rocked Morticia. I would lie in wait to scare trick-or-treaters, and always disappointed when I didn't get scared back. I loved the heart-pounding feeling of being scared, and I wanted to be scared all the time. On April Fool's, I couldn't wait to prank and be pranked. When you're a kid, scared is exciting and fun, and you scream and cry and laugh all in the same moment. Good times. Scary is different now that I'm an adult. Oh, I still like scary entertainment. I love, love, love American Horror Story. And I still scream when Jaws takes a bite out of the boat. Only now, I know real fear. Like living in a city with some of the fastest rising rents in the country. A diminishing ozone layer, rising sea levels, colonoscopies, and hair. Gray hair, ear hair, chin hair, areola hair, back hair, hairy knuckles, hairy toes, comb-overs, mutton chops, mullets, man buns, cat hair, hair balls, hairy balls, hair in the drain, hair in your food, manscaped hair, landing strip hair, Donald Trump hair. And of course, the scariest hair of all, ombre. Ombre? Ombre is paying $150 to give your hair the appearance that your roots have grown out and you need a fresh dye job. Ugh. All this talk is just too scary. I can't go on with this. I won't be able to sleep tonight. I have to be up early because tomorrow is the day after Halloween candy sale at Rite Aid. And I do enjoy scaring the skinnies when I shop for candy. Like Godzilla crushing Tokyo. Must have candy! Run away! Run away! God, I love Halloween.
The System of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather by Edgar Allan Poe.
During the autumn of 1848,
a tour through the extreme southern provinces of France, led me within a few miles of a certain maison de santé, or private madhouse, about which I had heard much from my medical friends in Paris. As I had never visited a place of the kind, I thought the opportunity too good to be lost. Turning from the main road, I rode some 2 miles through a dank and gloomy wood. When the Maison de Santé came into view, it was a fantastic chateau, much dilapidated and indeed scarcely tenantable through age and neglect. Its aspect inspired me with absolute dread, and checking my horse, I half resolved to turn back. I soon, however, grew ashamed of my weakness and proceeded. Ah, the gate. It appears to be unlocked. Strange, as the regulations of these private madhouses are more rigid than the public hospitals.
Bonsoir.
Oh! Pardon me, Monsieur
Maillard. Dr. Maillard.
It was the superintendent of the madhouse, a portly, fine-looking gentleman with a polished manner and an air of authority which was very impressive.
We so rarely have visitors. How wonderful! Come in, come in. There is a fire in the parlor where you can get warm. Won't you stay for dinner?
Why, thank you. It was an exceedingly neat parlor containing, among other indications of refined taste, many books and musical instruments. At the harp sat a young and very beautiful woman, excessively, though not to my taste, unpleasingly pale. She was attired in deep mourning.
Bonsoir, monsieur. Have you come from Paris?
I was cautious, as I had heard the institution of Monsieur Maillard was managed upon the soothing system. That all punishments were avoided, that the patients were permitted to roam about unconfined in the ordinary apparel of persons in right mind. So I could not be sure that the young lady was sane. In fact, there was a certain restless brilliancy about her eyes which half led me to imagine she was not.
The wine, sir. Ah, yes. Merci. Some wine, monsieur.
Please.
If you'll pardon me.
Mademoiselle. Forgive me, for asking, doctor, but is she...
Oh, no, no, no. A member of my family, my niece.
Oh, a thousand pardons. I just thought it possible, you know.
Oh, rather, it is myself who should thank you for the commendable prudence you have displayed. While my patients were permitted the privilege of roaming to and fro at will, they were often aroused to a dangerous frenzy by injudicious persons who called to inspect the house.
You never confined your patients?
Very rarely.
And you had no punishments of any kind?
None. The word lunacy was never employed. We contradicted no fancies which entered the brain. On the contrary, we encouraged them. We have had patients, for example, who fancied themselves chickens. The cure was to insist upon the thing as a fact, and thus to refuse them any other diet for a week than that which properly appertains to a chicken. In this manner, a little corn and gravel were made to perform wonders.
Well, fascinating. But this soothing system is no longer in force?
Decidedly.
Oh.
It had its disadvantages, even its dangers. After dinner, I will be happy to take you over the house and introduce you to a new system of my own invention, which, in my opinion, is incomparably the most effectual as yet devised.
Dinner is served.
Shall we?
The company assembled were apparently people of rank, certainly of high breeding, although by no means accoutred in what a Parisian would consider good taste. There was an air of oddity and short about the dress of the whole party.
Here, monsieur, sit by me.
Oh, thank you, doctor. My host was a world of good-natured anecdotes. He seemed quite willing to speak of his position as superintendent here, and indeed, the topic of lunacy was a favorite with every person present.
We had a patient here once that fancied herself a teapot.
There is scarcely an insane asylum in France which cannot supply a human teapot.
Oh, our teapot was careful to polish herself every morning with buckskin and whiting.
We had here, not long ago, a person who had taken it into his head that he was a donkey. He was a troublesome patient. And he was perpetually kicking out his heels.
Monsieur, upon my word, you are nearly as great a donkey as that poor unfortunate imagined himself. Whee! Your acting is very natural as I live. Whee!
We had a patient once upon a time who very pertinaciously maintained himself to be a Cordova cheese. And went about with a knife in his hand, soliciting his friends to try a small slice from the middle of his leg.
Oh, he was a great fool, but not to be compared with a certain individual whom we all know. Who took herself as a bottle of champagne and always went off with a pop and a fizz in this fashion.
And then there was Petit Gaillard, who thought himself a pinch of snuff and was truly distressed because he could not take himself between his own finger and thumb.
Madame Joyeuse was a more sensible person, as you know. She had been turned into a chicken, but as much she behaved with propriety.
Doctor, couldn't you help her?
No. Moreover, we needed the eggs.
Madame Joyeuse was a fool. Unlike Eugenie Salsafette.
It was the beautiful young girl from the parlor.
She was a very beautiful and painfully modest young lady who thought the ordinary mode of clothing indecent and wished to dress herself always by getting outside instead of inside her clothes. Like this.
Oh! Oh, mademoiselle! Mesdames,
messieurs, I will thank you to behave. You can either conduct yourselves with propriety, or you can quit the table.
My God! Who is that?
The lunatics every now and then get up a howl. We are used to these things and care really very little about them.
It occasionally happens, however, that the howls are succeeded by a simultaneously attempt at breaking loose.
I see. Well, how many do you have in charge?
At present, we have not more than 10 altogether.
Doctor, did I understand you to say that the system you have adopted in place of the celebrated soothing system is one of your own invention?
Not altogether. Some portions of it are referable to Dr. Tarr. Oh, of whom you have necessarily heard. And again, there are modifications in my plan, which I am happy to acknowledge as belonging of right to the celebrated Professor Feather. Oh. With whom, if I mistake not, you have the honor of an intimate acquaintance.
I am ashamed to confess that I have never even heard the names of either gentleman before.
Do you mean to say you've never heard either of the learned Dr. Tarr
Or the celebrated Professor Feather?
It was the opinion of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather that it is never safe to permit inmates to run at large unattended. A lunatic may be soothed for a time, but in the end, he is very apt to become obstreperous.
And the dexterity with which he counterfeits insanity presents one of the most singular problems in the study of mind.
When a madman appears thoroughly sane indeed, it is high time to put him in a straitjacket.
But my dear doctor, have you practical reason to think liberty hazardous in the case of a lunatic?
Why, a singular circumstance occurred in this very house. The soothing system was then in operation, and the patients were at large. One fine morning, the keepers found themselves pinioned hand and foot and thrown into the cells where they were attended as if they were the lunatics by the lunatics themselves. You see, a lunatic had taken it into his head that he had invented a better system than any ever heard of before and persuaded the rest of the patients to join him in a conspiracy for the overthrow of the reigning powers.
And the treatment, what was the particular species of treatment which the leader of the rebels put into operation?
It was a very capital system indeed. Simple, neat, no trouble at all. In fact, it was delicious. In fact, it was...
Gracious heavens! The lunatics have certainly broken loose!
I very much fear it is so!
And now came the climax. Leaping through these windows, there rushed a perfect army of what I took to be chimpanzees, orangutans, or big black baboons. The keepers, having been suddenly overpowered, had been tarred, feathered, and then shut up in underground cells. They had been so imprisoned for God knows how long, during which period Monsieur Maillard had generously allowed them not only the tar and feathers, which constituted his system, but some bread and water. At length, one of them, escaping through the sewer, gave freedom to all the rest. The soothing system, with important modifications, has been resumed at the chateau. Yet, I cannot help agreeing with Monsieur Maillard that his own treatment was a very capital one of its kind. As he justly observed,
it was simple, neat, and gave no trouble at all. Not in the least.
I have only to add that although I have searched every library in Europe for the works of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, I have, up to the present day, utterly failed in my endeavors of procuring an edition.
Sweet Marietta,
Is it love? Come calling, Marietta. It's later than you think. Do you feel yourself falling, or are you still a woman?
Listening to Sandbox Radio. Find the podcast of our shows in iTunes and Stitcher, and help other people find us by taking a moment to leave a rating or a review, if you would. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news on our upcoming live shows. We'll be recording our last show of the season at ACT Theater in downtown Seattle on December 30th. In that show, our guests will be tenor Rob McPherson, storyteller Willie Weir, and stepping in to music direct will be Angie Louise of the Love Markets. Now back to the show.
Had none upon theirs.
Harumph!
Those stars weren't so big. They were really so small. You might think such a thing wouldn't matter at all. But because they had stars, all the star-bellied sneetches would brag.
We're the best kind of sneetch at the beaches.
With their snoots in the air, they would sniff, they would snort. Well, we'll have nothing to do with those plain-bellied sort.
Indeed. Oh, indeed.
And whenever they met some, when they were out walking, they'd hike right on past them without even talking.
when the star-bellied children went out to play ball.
Could a plain belly get in the game?
Not at all.
You could only play if your bellies had stars.
And the plain bellied children had none upon thars.
When the star-bellied sneetches had frankfurter roasts, or picnics, or parties, or marshmallow toasts, they never invited the plain-bellied sneetches.
They left them out cold in the dark of the beaches. They kept them away, never let them come near, and that's how they treated them year after year.
Then one day it seems, while the plain belly sneetches were moping and doping along on the beaches, just sitting there wishing their bellies had stars, a stranger zipped up in the strangest of cars.
My friend,
he announced in a voice clear and keen,
my name is Sylvester McMonkey McBean.
Oh.
And I've heard of your troubles. I've heard you're unhappy.
Yeah.
But I can fix that. I'm the fix-it-up chappy.
Oh.
I've come here to help you. I have what you need, and my prices are low. And I work at great speed, and my work is 100% guaranteed.
Then quickly, Sylvester McMonkey McBean put together a very peculiar machine. And he said,
you want stars like a star-bellied sneetch?
Yes.
My friends, you can have them for $3 each.
Wow.
Just pay me your money and hop right aboard.
So they clambered inside. Then the big machine roared.
And it clonked, and it bonked, and it jerked, and it burst, and it bopped them about, but the thing really worked. When the plain-bellied sneetches popped out, they had stars.
They actually did. They had stars upon thars.
Yay! Yeah! Oh,
then they yelled at the ones who had stars at the start.
We're exactly like you. You can't tell us apart.
We're all the same now, you snooty old smarties. And now we can go to your Frankfurter parties.
Good grief!
Groaned the ones who had stars at the first. We're still the best sneetches, and they are the worst.
But now how in the world will we know they all frowned if which one is what or the other way round?
Oh, that's true.
Then up came McBean with a very sly wink, and he said, things are not quite as bad as you think.
Thank goodness.
So you don't know who's who.
No, we don't.
That is perfectly true, but come with me, friends. Do you know what I'll do? I'll make you again the best sneetches on beaches. And all it will cost you is $10 each. Belly stars are no longer in style, said McBean. What you need is a trip through my star-off machine.
Oh.
This wondrous contraption will take off your stars so you won't look like sneetches who have them on thar.
Oh, what a relief. Let's do it.
And that handy machine worked very precisely, removed all the stars from their tummies quite nicely.
Ooh.
Then, with their snoots in the air, they paraded about and opened their beaks and they let out a shout.
We know who is who, now there isn't a doubt. The best kind of snitches are snitches without!
Then, of course, those with stars got frightfully mad. To be wearing a star now was frightfully bad.
Then, of course, old Sylvester McMonkey McBean invited them into his star-off machine.
Ow! Ouch! Ow!
from then on, as you probably guessed, things really got into a horrible mess.
All the rest of that day, on those wild, screaming beaches, the fix-it-up chappie kept fixing up sneeches. On again, off again, in again, out again.
Through the machines they raced around and about again, changing their stars every minute or two.
They kept paying money, they kept running through, until neither the plane nor the star bellies knew
whether this one was that one,
or that one was this one.
Or which one was what one?
Or what one was who?
Then, when every last cent of their money was spent, the fix-it-up chappie packed up. And he went. And he laughed as he drove in his car up the beach. They never will learn, no, you can't teach a sneech.
But McBean was quite wrong. I'm quite happy to say that the sneeches got really quite smart on that day.
The day they decided that sneeches are sneeches.
And no kind of sneech is the best on the beaches.
That day all the sneeches forgot about stars.
And whether they had one or not, upon thars.
It was never Raquel's intention to come down with the plague.
The pestilence.
It was like everything else that happened in her life, good or bad. It wasn't on purpose. It just sprouted, sudden and spectacular, like a confused fungus.
What's that weird thing on your neck?
Eddie had asked. After the kids had divided up the Halloween candy and he'd done his inhaler for the evening, so his oxygen levels were sky high, and he was ready for a little of the old hanky panky. But now he was faced with this. Some strange, corpulent mound staring at him from just above his wife's left clavicle.
What the hell, Raquel? You took off the rest of your costume,
Eddie said.
Go wipe that sucker off, too.
What are you moaning on about?
Raquel snapped, annoyed. She'd barely settled on the sofa after picking up the kids' toys and quick mopping their decrepit kitchen floor. She wished Eddie would let them move down to Kent and live in the relative ease of new construction.
But no!
He just had to be the last blue-collar worker on the hill.
What?
That! What is that thing?
Eddie was pointing his big fingers at her like a 5-year-old. Raquel made an exasperated sound.
Check!
Pulled out her camera phone, reversed the view, and decided to take a look. She aimed it straight at her neck.
Holy shit.
Holy shit. It was some kind of boil, she thought, filled with greenish pus that seemed to pulsate.
Is that a heartbeat?
This was absolutely not part of her witch costume. Raquel's mind raced for some easy explanation.
Is this what happens when you can't afford free-range chickens? Some kind of GMO thing, maybe, like a big lymphatic Monsanto surprise?
I say again, what the hell, Raquel?
Eddie hissed more fiercely, like she'd done this just to piss him off.
Our rent's going up. The shop's got to start paying people $15 an hour. And you go and get the freaking plague?
Yeah, Eddie. I did it on purpose.
Raquel snapped back, not happy with his attitude.
Jesus, just calm down.
It's not about you. And that was true. The Black Death had nothing to do with Eddie.
Go watch the Zags game in the kids' room.
She ordered, and he did. She heard the TV go on loud. Now Raquel had the problem all to herself. An undulating pustule, the size of a latte lid on the side of her neck.
How am I gonna cover it up for work?
She thought.
Wear a turtleneck? What a joke.
Law firms were not into pustules or turtlenecks. They liked their paralegals svelte and semi-professional.
Oh, God.
Something had begun to tickle in her nether regions. Was there one down by her ya-ya? Under her favorite pair of Spanx? What the?
Oh, God. Oh, God! This is so unfair!
She had to know more. She grabbed her phone and WebMD'd it.
Boo-ba-nic-plague.
Raquel hit the link. And a world of woes instantly appeared on her screen.
Return of a mysterious medieval...
Pustules popping up all over the Pike Pine Corridor.
Strange fevers and... visions and rapidly evolving.
Raquel careened towards the bathroom and turned on her magnified mirror for a better look. The shivering pestilence appeared to be dancing? Jiggling just a tiny bit, this way and that. And was there music?
This is not happening,
she declared. But then... she leaned in to listen. It sounded like something she knew from her childhood, something her dad would start whistling when the repo man came. It was happy, but in a dangerously demented 70s way. With a sinking feeling, Raquel realized this was the song that weaseled its way into her cortex whenever something really awful was happening. And she knew she should
say something
and stop whatever awful thing was going on.
Like with Mr. Hanker's hands in the ninth grade, or Eddie's sudden infatuation with Trump and that porn site.
But instead of real words, this relentlessly upbeat tune was the only response she had. She could definitely hear it now. In all its disco glory, it was coming from her boil, which bounced and boogied and seemed to be birthing something in a John Travolta sort of way.
Shit.
In horror, Raquel watched. Her skin split like the Red Sea, and gelatinous liquid ran down her neck. She wanted to call out for Eddie, but all she could manage was...
do the hustle!
Do the hustle! Do, 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 do.
Inquisitive leg appeared, shaking off pus and testing the air. Then another leg found its footing on her shoulder, and out popped the entire thing. It landed like a paratrooper.
On my off-white distressed vanity!
A grasshopper. A happy grasshopper.
A very free positive grasshopper.
He was doing a locust version of the hustle. Tiny, tiny little steps. Forward, forward, back, back.
Forward, forward, back, back.
And Raquel could sense he was smiling at her as if to say,
"Hey, girl. Take a load off. Keep on trucking. It's all good. The droughts, the credit scams, the pussy grabs. Nothing to be alarmed by. Nothing to get the plague over. We'll work it out. You wait and see."
Raquel felt her mind expand and blow apart from this little guy's relentless optimism.
I mean, we are all stardust. Isn't that it? And all the crap we've got on our plates right now, it's all just bits of carbon in the end. Right?
Right.
Ah, I knew it!
Raquel now grooved freely to the beat of her own personal locust. And her feet picked up the complex pattern.
Forward, forward, back, back.
And she began to sing along with actual conviction this time. Because...
What the hell, Raquel?
She asked herself.
Why not?
And her worries melted like ice cream in July.
It'll all be over in an instant anyway. This crazy election, driverless cars, my lack of a sex drive.
And her heart lifted and flew up and up.
Do it!
As she sang and hustled her way down Harrison Street across 12th and deep into her own battered nirvana.
Everybody now.
Do the hustle. I know my rights. Dad!
Did someone call for a lawyer?
And now it's time for everyone's favorite family show.
My father's a lawyer!
You're out of order, Mr. Attorney.
These two better start cross-examining their oatmeal. Are you a duty face, Muffin?
No. Yes.
Now, Biff.
Well, I'm a lawyer, Muffin, and what your brother did is called slander. Now you have cause to sue him.
Don't I have a right to my opinion?
Ooh. Of course, and the right to say your opinion in public. But you made a statement, and you aggravated that with stupid. Add assault when you pushed her and theft for stolen juice, Biff. She's got you dead to rights. As a lawyer...
Here he goes again.
I can protect your rights. But what if I wasn't a lawyer? Who's always there to help you?
Mother?
Don't be silly. Mothers aren't lawyers.
What your sexist father means
is that there is an organization of lawyers and volunteers whose mission it is to protect and preserve the civil rights of all Americans, according to the Bill of Rights in the Constitution of the United States of America. It's the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union.
Gee, Mother's pretty smart, and she's not even a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah, not a lawyer. Father is a lawyer.
My father's a lawyer. Tune in next week when Mother's out of town.
The network's calling it a break.
And we hear Biff say...
What does ex parte mean?
Who cares?
This November, when we get out and vote, honor our veterans and remember the first Americans on Thanksgiving. Keep in mind who's been working to defend and preserve the individual rights and liberties guaranteed by the Constitution and laws of the United States for almost 100 years.
I know, the ACLU.
That's right. Visit www.aclu.org and give generously, or better yet, become a member today. The American Civil Liberties Union, because freedom can't fight for itself.
When my man goes away, I go out and I play. I head right down to the corner. It's not very far to this sweet little bar. I walk up to the man and I order whiskey and rum. They can be so much fun, but that's not the taste I am craving. Beer and wine can entice. They make you feel nice. They're good for some misbehaving. This ain't the kind of joint that you are thinking. It's not a place for carousing or for drinking. It's not where you go to meet someone you don't know. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar. Willy Wonka is there. He is fixing his hair. He wants to look nice for his honey. Mr. Hershey go loco when he drinks the cocoa. He gonna spend lots of money. I'd never cheat on my man with another. Chocolate is the only thing that could replace my lover. Then it's sweet. My satisfaction is complete. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar. Oh, when my baby comes home, I'm no longer alone, but the flavor of chocolate still haunts me. Kissing, that's what I've been missing. I know that my baby still wants me. I'd never cheat on my man with another. Chocolate is the only thing that could replace my lover. It's smooth and it's sweet. My satisfaction is complete. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar. I never stray too far. I head right to the local chocolate bar.
Thank you. entropy, chaos, oblivion. The forces that shape our destinies watch as we blunder about within our self-imposed asylum. They are observing us from that unfathomable region, that place from which no traveler returns unchanged, from beyond the box.
When the world's gone a little crazy, one thing gets you through. You've got a family to protect, a family who loves you. But even love is not enough to keep you out of harm. We can ask our questions later, and you can fall into my arms. These are the family arms.
Is filmed in front of a live television studio audience.
Honey, I'm home! Janice! Now, where is that woman?
That woman has been busy making you a pot roast and doing an early evening perimeter sweep.
My favorite.
What, my pot roast?
No, your perimeters. They're always so well swept.
Sometimes I think you only married me for my tactical strategies.
Welcome to the golden age of television. One of many throughout the medium's long history. They say the television screen is nothing if not a window into the American mind, giving us a portal to peek at the propensity of a people. Now imagine a future where the most popular TV show is about a family armed to the teeth. And wonder, what pilot season is this? And should I check my local listings? Tonight's episode, Everybody Loves Fear, by Wayne Raleigh.
Hon, where are the 12-gauge pump shells?
Second drawer, dear.
Fred wants to talk about the hedge. Hi, Fred. How about I trim the hedge? Well, I want to trim the hedge. Whoa, is that new proofing on your Suburban, Fred? Very nice. How about your Firestones? Too bad you can't change a tire from inside the car.
Idiot. Are you shooting at the neighbors?
Just Fred.
Close the door if you're going to shoot.
We're done.
How is Fred?
He's locked down at the moment.
Elaine told me that new proofing will stop a 223 Remington from only one lane away.
Ah, he's fooling himself. Show off.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad.
Yay! Hey, Tiger.
Mom, what does it mean when a girl draws on you?
Aww. Well, it could mean you're standing too close.
Or it could mean that she likes you.
Roger.
Well, how many rounds did you go through before agreeing to go out with me?
Not enough.
Tim, did she take the safety off?
No.
She likes you.
Yeah.
Sarah, come down to dinner, please.
Can't a typical American teenager have any privacy around here? For your information, I was in the bathroom.
I know, dear. That's why I shot up into your bedroom.
Don't you guys remember? I'm a vegan now.
We support you, dear.
No meat, no dairy. You live the way you're gonna live, honey. More pot roast for me. What are you doing?
I'm taking off my vest, Dad.
In this family, we wear our bulletproof vests at the dinner table, young lady.
Why?
What is this why business?
What if someone shoots at you, dear?
Who's gonna shoot me at the dinner table?
Are you kidding? Your back is completely open from four paces down the hallway.
Your father could shoot at you.
At this range, I wouldn't be likely to miss either.
What if your brother is being shot at as he comes home? He opens the door to get inside and a stray bullet meant for him.
Jeez, Mom.
I'm just saying.
I'm not gonna breach protocol 40. I'm not a complete dork.
Good for you, son.
You never know is all I am saying.
We're not always going to be around to cover you. But until that day comes, vests at the dinner table.
Ugh, fine.
What's going on when kids won't wear their Kevlar at the dinner table?
Let's not dwell on it, dear.
Well, I'm not dwelling. Janice, I'm just wondering what they're teaching kids these days.
I said, let's not dwell, Roger.
Is that a new single action?
Just for around the house.
Mom, it's fine, okay? I'll wear my vest at the table.
Better get it right the first time, Janice.
I can shoot the junk off a ladybug at 60 paces, Roger, and you know it.
It's why I married you, darling. Will you please pass the potatoes?
Will you please put your hands where I can see them and relock your 357 before you do?
Here you are.
Thank you, dear.
Are you and Dad fighting?
Of course not, honey. We're just having a discussion.
And Sarah, how was school today?
Fine.
Did you shoot anyone?
No.
Were you shot at?
Something happened on the quad, but we eat in the student union, so we only heard it. Kenny fired a few rounds out the door, but he was just being Kenny.
Kenny is the student body general.
Shut up, dweeb!
Make me!
Timothy! Do not fire on your sister!
Okay.
Well, was anyone killed?
I don't know. I guess. Some.
You guess. It's like pulling teeth to get you to tell us about your day.
May I be excused?
You may have been a little hard on her, dear.
Yes, well, when I was a kid, if someone got shot, you knew about it. You knew who it was. You sent your thoughts and prayers. You posted something.
Kids today. Posted something? You mean on Fogey Book?
Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad. I'm going out.
Just hold it right there, young lady. Just where do you think you're going?
There's a dance tonight. I'm going with Denise and Shelby.
Not dressed like that, you're not.
What's wrong with how I'm dressed? It's jeans and a sweater.
Where are your guns?
Your father asked you a question, young lady.
I'm not taking them.
Excuse me?
I'm not taking my guns to the dance, Dad.
Like hell you aren't!
Roger!
Oh, don't Roger me. Do you hear this? She's going out. She doesn't have her gun. She's not wearing her vest. You talk to her, Janice.
They won't even let you in the dance without a gun, honey.
They do now! There is an unarmed section in the back of the gym by the locker rooms. We hang out there.
What? Who is we?
Some kids at school and me made a petition.
I forbid it!
I'm not like you, Dad!
We know you're trying to find yourself, honey.
No daughter of mine will walk around outside this compound, unarmed, uncovered, unprotected, for the whole world to draw a bead on.
It isn't like that! You don't understand!
I do understand. You are a sitting duck.
I am not afraid, Dad.
Oh. What did you say?
Oh, Sarah.
I'm not going to be afraid anymore.
After everything we've done for you? After everything I've taught you?
Dad!
This is just a phase. You know, you'll grow out of it. You are afraid.
No! No, I'm not. This is me. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to be brave.
Not in this house, you're not.
You can't stop me, Dad. I'm brave. I'm sorry if that hurts you. I'm going to the dance.
You are not leaving this house unafraid, Sarah.
Roger, calm down.
Are you going to shoot me, Dad?
I have to keep you safe.
Roger, for God's sake.
Be afraid.
I'm not a little girl anymore.
Please, be afraid.
I won't. I'm turning around now.
Please, be afraid. Please, be afraid.
I love you, Daddy.
Please, be afraid. Please, be afraid. Please, be afraid.
Why is Dad lying on the floor curled up in a ball like that?
Well, he's either having a complete and total nervous breakdown, or he's got a teenage daughter.
We are the Family Arms.
Jose Juicy Gonzalez. Michael Marcus on the bass. Dan Tierney on the drums. We miss you, Mr. Gene Wilder. Imogen Love,
Catherine Van Meter, Sarah Harlett,
Penny Black,
Rebecca Olson,
Marta Zegan,
Laura Kinney,
Jason Moore, and Richard Simon, and the Sandbox Radio Orchestra. We've already done that.
And I'm your host for Sandbox Radio, Leslie Love. Let's hear it for the brilliant John Engerman! And give it up for the luminous Sean Marie Stanton!
And now, Dan Tierney on drums, Michael Marcus on the bass, and on the keys, our maestro and decomposer, Jose Juicy Gonzalez!
Jones, Katie Sewell, and Ware Harmon. Our stage managers were Susie Butler and Stina Lottie. And the show was mixed by Luke Carawald and recorded by Christopher Stewart. So, we're gonna bring out our lyric cards because now's the time in the show when we always love for you to sing along. I think you picked up the tune. Ready? Here we go. Special guests will be Metropolitan Opera tenor Rob McPherson, storyteller Willie Weir, and special guest music director Angie Louise. Good night!
The Shadow Knows was written by Scott Augustin, Lisa Halpern, Elizabeth Heffron, Peggy Platt, and Wayne Raleigh. Stories by Edgar Allan Poe and Dr. Seuss were adapted for radio by Richard Simon and myself. The show was sound engineered by Luke Carawald, recorded by Christopher Stewart, and this podcast was mixed by Dave Pascal. Find out where you can catch Maestro Jose Juicy Gonzalez and his trio at reverbnation.com/Jose Gonzalez Trio. It's been a challenging time for many of us since the election. Please join us on December 30th, won't you? We're working on an evening to lift your spirits and help you transition into 2017 with a little hope. Dig deeper into the Sandbox and find the podcast archive at sandboxradio.org. I'm your host, Leslie Law, and on behalf of my fellow producer, Richard Simon, and all of us here at Sandbox Radio, we thank you for listening.